Welcome everyone to week 13, Take the Points podcast. 13 weeks. I'm Tom Zalesnok. I'm here in Hartford, Connecticut, and we have a guest host this week. Ryan Spillett is back. The return.
That's right. Can't hold me back.
Ryan is live from Phoenix, Arizona via Skype. This is your third appearance, I think, on the show. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah.
So I have no idea where Dan is today. He was a last second change of plans.
Work.
Yeah.
Work craziness at the airport. There's all sorts of stuff going on. So yeah, he asked me to fill in and I'm more than happy to do it. I'm excited.
We did a short podcast last week, and so I've come loaded for bear this week with lots of stuff, including a non-Power 5 conference wrap-up, which we'll do at the end of the show. This will be the first time we've really gotten into the non-Power 5 conferences, besides UConn, of course. But they're not even good enough to qualify as non-Power 5.
Yeah, they're 1AA.
Pretty much. We'll get to them later, though. I want to start by going over the new rankings. Just came out yesterday. Alabama jumps all the way to number one. Oregon and FSU hold tight at 2 and 3. And Mississippi State drops from number one to number four after the tough loss at Alabama. After that, you've got TCU 5. And then Ohio State jumps Baylor. Ohio State at 6 and Baylor at 7. My takeaways were that the committee clearly believes the SEC is the best conference. And it seems like whoever wins the SEC is going to be probably number one until all of the teams have an extra loss. I guess if Bama had two losses, maybe it would change. But as long as they have the one loss, they're going to be number one. Also, Ohio State jumping Baylor, even though it doesn't really matter, I thought was a little odd. I think Baylor having the bye week put them out of the public perception and must have hurt them a little. But Ohio State didn't really do a lot to me to deserve jumping Baylor. Again, doesn't really matter down at 6 and 7, and it should play itself out. But what do you think?
I agree. I'm extremely disappointed that Baylor is at 7. They beat TCU head-to-head. There's no reason that TCU should be 2 spots ahead of them. Don't give me the better win, better loss. It doesn't matter. They beat them head to head. They should be higher. And Ohio State being at 6 is a complete farce. They're no good. Jim Delaney of the Big Ten is such a crybaby. He's going to really politic and make sure that they're at least in the conversation. But honestly, I don't think Ohio State's a factor for the top four.
Well, let me respond to those one at a time. TCU, I actually thought a couple weeks ago, belonged ahead of Baylor. The reason is, you know, the best team doesn't always win a game. TCU was dominating that game until about 8 minutes left. Baylor came back and looked great. TCU sort of let it slip away. In addition to that, TCU had some really quality wins, and the teams they had played, their resume was a lot better than Baylor up to that point. Now, since then, Baylor's had a convincing win against Oklahoma. TCU really struggled against Kansas. And TCU doesn't have much left on their schedule to prove themselves, whereas Baylor still has a couple really strong games, including one this week. So if Baylor wins out, if both teams win out, I think Baylor deserves to be ahead of TCU. Right now, as I said, it doesn't matter. Ohio State, I want to remain optimistic and not say that they're going to get in based on name and based on fan base and the fact that they bring in a lot of money, but it does seem slightly suspicious. So I guess we will wait and see what happens with that.
Okay.
Title odds. I looked some of these up. Give me your thoughts. We've got Bama at 9-4. That's the favorite. After that, it's sort of a cluster. You've got Oregon 4-1. Florida State and TCU both at 6-1. Ohio State also at 6-1. And then Mississippi State and Baylor at 7-1. Are there any you like out of those?
To be honest with you, not really. I think that the numbers are about right. If I had to put money on something, I would say Probably I would put my money. I mean, the best value is probably going to be Oregon.
This is a tough year. I don't think any of these teams in the top seven really stand out from one another. TCU looked shaky against Kansas, but they've looked good the rest of the year. Ohio State had their one critical loss against Virginia Tech, but they've looked pretty great since. Baylor, as we know, can score a ton of points. So I really do think any of these teams is capable of winning it all if they just get hot for the next, couple weeks plus the playoff. Even Mississippi State, who seemingly got crushed by Bama, after a shaky start, they came back strong and they had their opportunities. They could have, been close in that game. I think if those two teams played again on a neutral field, Bama would be the favorite, but it is possible Mississippi State could win that.
Maybe.
Maybe. So I really don't like any of those bets. I think maybe Oregon at 4-1. I mean, Bama's not really great odds. Florida State seems pretty good odds at 6-1 for the defending champ, but the way they've been playing, it's hard to believe that they could win two games in a row against top seven opponents.
I
Any
agree. Well,
thoughts?
no, I mean, I agree. I think that it's definitely jumbled. There's not really a team that stands out. I mean, Alabama stands out because their talent level is just insane, but they have flaws. Every team is definitely flawed, and hopefully it'll make for a fun Final Four and a first playoff.
Bama's the team I guess I would put my money on if I really had to just at gunpoint pick who's going to win. Odds aside, but they've got flaws and they played only a couple really difficult road games. Fortunately, somehow their schedule sets up every year where they have like nine home games and two real road games. And the one road game they lost at Ole Miss, and the other one they should have lost at LSU, except LSU basically, maybe I shouldn't say should have lost, but easily could have lost if LSU blitzed and didn't play the prevent. So they're not invincible for sure. And two games on a neutral field, who knows?
I agree. I
I would
agree.
love to see a team like Oregon or Baylor, one of these high-scoring shootout teams, get hot and win it this year.
I said it on the first time I came on the podcast. I said that I thought Oregon was going to be the national champs, and they had the early loss, and I looked kind of foolish, but they got healthier on the offensive line. They lost their center. That's I'm anxious to see how they look after that, how they adjust. They just started hitting their stride. He's their most valuable lineman, and to lose that guy is going to be kind of hard. But we'll see how they adjust. And I still think Oregon's great value, and I think that they're going to be hitting their peak.
I went back and looked at my preseason picks, and I get to brag right now because all of these teams will lose in the next couple weeks, and I'll get none of them right. But I picked Bama, Oregon, Florida State, and Baylor. And right now I've got three of the four in and the other one right on the verge. So I'm feeling good about those picks now.
I agree. I had Oregon and Baylor as well, and as well as Alabama and Florida State. So I don't know. I think I had Ole Miss. I think I had Ole Miss.
Maybe. Well, when three of my four teams lose this week, check back next week.
I don't know about that. This is pretty easy slate for most of the top teams.
Well, I think Alabama's safe, but you just never know what's going to happen in November with other teams. Weird shit happens all the time.
All the time. I agree.
All right. Any specific games you want to recap from last week? We had Alabama and Mississippi State, which we touched on. I think that game went pretty much according to plan.
Yeah, it was a very standard SEC, pretty much by the script.
I was actually kind of impressed with Mississippi State despite the loss. The fact that they hung in there when they were down 19-0, they made some plays. They had some crucial turnovers. Dak threw an interception in the end zone. That could have been 7 points easily. So they actually had their chances, and if they had capitalized on a few opportunities, I think that would have been a very close game, maybe even a win. So Bama deserved the win. They outplayed Mississippi State, but Mississippi State didn't get embarrassed.
Oh no, they held their own. They found some areas they got better at. They made adjustments. That's exciting to see. A guy like Dan Mullen, who gets a lot of praised lately, but to see him make those in-game adjustments against a guy like Saban, and like you said, they made the comeback and they had some chances. That was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I love Dan Mullen, and I'm going to save this for later, but some things he said throughout the year I think could really help my hometown team in UConn. But we'll save that for later again once we get to UConn in garbage time.
All right.
Florida State 30, Miami 26. Miami was up 23-7 to begin this game. I laid down, I think, $30, $40 on Florida State, so not an enormous wager, but a sizable one, one where I had a vested interest, and I was never sweating it whatsoever. Even down to the last 5 minutes, I just knew. My only thought was maybe Florida State would win by a field goal and I'd push, but never in doubt. This is what they do.
I had them by 4, and I didn't sweat it at all. It was completely – it's hard to see a team down like that and explain to somebody that doesn't get it. Like, yeah, I wasn't worried at all, at all. I knew they were going to come back, and I knew they were going to win, and I knew they were going to cover.
Yeah, even – I think it was Kirk Herbstreit who was announcing the game, even said that. He goes, listen, this is what they do. At some point, we don't know when, but they'll flip a switch – and they'll turn it on and they'll start playing. These guys are already counting their paychecks for the NFL.
They just know they have to just hold steady, and they'll get a chance at the title. And that's all they want. They just want a shot at the playoff.
Exactly. So they're not gonna break a sweat until they actually have to. And they're going to win out most likely. But that's it. I mean, bet on them if it's a low line. If it's a huge line like this week, then maybe you want to change your strategy a little bit. All right, Georgia destroyed Auburn. I was a little bit surprised by that. Not that Georgia could run the ball and score points on Auburn, but I was shocked at how they just shut Auburn down. 7 points is really unfathomable for Nick Marshall.
Oh, yeah. That was the biggest surprise of the weekend for me. You know, that was the game that I really thought Auburn – I thought they'd just make it happen. At some point, they were going to, like you said, flip the switch and make some plays. And Georgia's defense, holy cow, I mean, hats off to them. But, you know, this is what Mark Richt does. He gets his seat a little bit warm, and then he gets a game like this, and it saves him. And, you know, everyone's going to forgive him for a while until he blows a bowl game or something, or blows an early season game next year. But this is what Mark Richt does. Not only does he lose a game that he should win, he also makes sure that as soon as his seat gets a bit too warm, he always pulls off a game he probably shouldn't.
Right. And we're not going to talk about Gurley's injury. It sucks, obviously. I mean, he's a great player, the best running back in college football. They're not as good without him, even though Chubb is a great runner. It just sucks. I mean, there's nothing more to say about it. I feel bad for them. Just when they had figured out not to let Hudson Mason throw the ball at all. So hopefully they'll get Michelle back and maybe he'll start running, or maybe they can have another guy come in and split some carries with Chubb, at least do a, you know, a 70-30 split, because they're best when they just run the ball, only let Hudson Mason throw when he absolutely needs to, and rely on the defense in the ground game. And if they do that, I actually think they have a shot to beat anyone they face in the SEC championship game. So we shall see.
Just try to make Hudson Mason into Greg McElroy and you're good to go.
Pretty much. Even that's asking a lot. Just try to
42 times and throw it 15. Just that's all you got to do.
Now about this Georgia Auburn game, I'm going to skip ahead here in our notes, but there was a story, more like a letter on the web from a Auburn fan who went to visit Athens for the Georgia game. He talked about some deplorable behavior, getting bottles thrown at him, getting spit on. You can Google it. It was actually, the story ran on a site called SaturdayDownSouth.com, which is a good like SEC football blog. So the Auburn fan wrote about the stuff that happened at games. I was a little surprised. I mean, of course you get trash talked when you wear an opposing jersey into a stadium. You know, when I go to the New England Patriots Stadium with my Buffalo Bills gear on, people yell at me. They say that women from upstate have 3 teeth, all that crap. I'm used to hearing that. What I'm not used to was spitting and throwing bottles. I've had a beer dumped on me, probably on purpose, possibly accidentally, wearing my Syracuse stuff to a UConn basketball game, but it wasn't a bottle, you know, it was more like a drunken fan sort of chucking a plastic cup of beer. In this, they said throwing beers, spitting. The spitting was what really surprised me because I thought that was unheard of. However, I talked to you and you have a different take on it, and I'm just going to turn it over to you.
Oh, it happens a lot. I've had it happen several times in high school and in college, you know, on the playing field. So maybe it's a little bit different, but
so you're a star lacrosse player for those who don't know.
Yeah, I'm a retired something, but yeah, I mean it happens more than people think. It's just something that really you can't really retaliate because it's so hard to prove it. I mean, it's so impossible to see the majority of the time that, you know, they get away with it, and if you're smart and walk away, then it gets under their skin. You don't react. And but in the crowd, that's a different story. I mean, it's definitely crossing a bit of a line, but
can you explain the situation in which you were spit on? Were you playing the game? Were you out on the field, like on the sideline?
No, on the field. On the field during game.
So this was other players.
Oh yeah, this was just an opponent, you know, John a little bit, getting face to face, kind of doing a little bit of trash talking, and just he'd spit, you know, or somebody would walk up and come up from behind me, and it's kind of I turn and they'd spit and walk away. And
was it one player doing it over and over? Was it one team, or has this happened by many people by many different teams?
It's one region.
Yes. Okay.
It has only happened playing against teams from Long Island.
But has it happened from multiple teams?
Yes, high school and college. It's happened for both, and it's never happened to me outside of a team from Long Island. They're the only ones that do it.
Has this ever happened when you were in the crowd, or was that not an issue as a spectator?
I've seen it a little bit more at hockey. I remember seeing it at some hockey games in college, in grad school. When I used to work security at the hockey games in grad school, I definitely saw that at some of those North Country, you know, the crazy Canadians, they get into that a little bit.
Yeah. You know what? I've seen fights go down and I've seen beers thrown, as I've said, plenty of trash talking, sometimes clever, sometimes just sort of toying around, sometimes really vulgar and crossing the line. But the two things that I don't see as much, which I think are for some reason worse, are the spitting and the vulgar stuff to girls, I think is really weird. I mean, maybe that's a little old fashioned and or sexist of me, but to me, that's really weird to say vulgar shit to a girl at a game just because she's wearing the wrong color scarf, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I think, honestly, the whole spitting thing, it's because beers cost $13 now, and who wants to throw a $13 beer? Spitting's easier because it's cheaper.
Is this like dip spit or beer spit or what? That was unclear to me whether they were like loading up with beer and then spitting or just like trying to hawk up a loogie.
I don't know. Well, remember, they don't serve beer at these stadiums. So all this beer talk about stuff, beer in the stadium, that's smuggled in. That's on security. So you can't really do anything about it as far as it can, you know, they don't sell beer at the concession stands at those games. So this is smuggled in beer and that's on security. That's their problem.
Yeah. I think the thing to remember in a situation like this is that, there's no like horrible fan base. Some people say that certain ones are worse than others. Like I've read a lot that Georgia's worse than say Ole Miss or LSU. But even if they're a bad school for this kind of stuff, it's still a very small percentage of the population. It's like how, you know, there's a billion Muslims and there's plenty of terrorists, but it's a small percentage of the Muslims are actually terrorists.
Well, I'll give you this. From everything that I've read, everyone said LSU is the worst.
I've seen that LSU is good.
No, according to Tim Tebow's book, and he said that was by far the worst stadium, the most vulgar things. They were the ones that started with the finding out the quarterback's cell phone number and calling them all hours of the night before the game. That all started with LSU, apparently.
Wait, Tim Tebow wrote a book?
Oh, fantastic book. A couple of years back.
Really? I had no idea.
Huh. Oh, yeah. I went out and bought it. I bought it the week it came out.
No offense to Tim Tebow, but he doesn't seem like the literary type.
It's very smart. Very well-written book. Excellent book. I really enjoyed it. I read it, maybe two or three sittings. I got through the whole thing. It was very good.
What's it called?
It is called, let me see here. I have it right here. I don't have it. It's out on Lent. It's lent out to somebody. It's called like in my own words or something. No, I can't remember. I'll look it up.
All right. If you find it, send me a photo. We'll put it up with the podcast.
Really good.
All right. Anyway, let's move on. I guess we're never going to solve the problem of spitting at stadiums, but
Eyes. Sorry, that's what it's called. Through my eyes.
Okay. Through his eyes, he saw people call his cell phone and fuck with him at night?
Basically.
Damn you, LSU. All right, well, people who do this stuff, stop doing this shit. Like, stop being a douchebag.
Enjoy the game.
Yeah, you can yell and you can talk trash and you can scream. And I encourage everyone to be a drunken idiot when they go to football games. But just don't, like, spit on people or threaten them.
I agree. Enjoy the game. Be rabid for your squad, and that's it.
Yes. The end. All right. Melvin Gordon at 408 yards. I think we can skip this. We're running long on time, but that was a hell of a performance, and more rushing yards in that game than Wake Forest all year.
Fair enough.
So if you like Wake Forest, take that for what it's worth. You have less rushing yards on the whole season than Melvin Gordon had in one game.
All right.
What are your thoughts on the Heisman race? We don't really talk about the Heisman too much on this podcast. To me, it's down to Mariota versus Gordon.
I think Melvin Gordon definitely played his way into the conversation. I think right now it's probably going to be Mariota or Gordon, and it's going to come down to their conference championship games.
I agree. Gordon had the Heisman moment of the year, which was that game. Mariota hasn't had a game quite like that, but he's had some impressive ones. I think if they win out and they have one loss and make the playoff, he probably wins it based on the whole overall performance this season. But if they slip up somehow, lose a game, get out of the playoff, I think maybe Gordon's a pretty safe pick with he's going to have like 2,200 yards by the end of the year. So he'd be a nice, safe, easy pick should Mariota slip up.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's 1-2 and it's Mariota's to lose. But, keep in mind the Heisman voters, they don't really give out the Lifetime Achievement Award. And, it was something that a lot of people say with Mariota, they're like, well, there's not a lot of good candidates and he's been so good and so close for so many years that, they'll just give it to him. They've never done that before. They could have done that with Andrew Luck. He never won a Heisman. And everyone said the same thing. They're like, well, Lifetime Achievement Award, Luck should get it. And he didn't. So
no, Peyton Manning, same thing.
I mean, so I think I read some articles and they're like, well, Mariota's going to get it. Probably because of that reason. I'm like, that's irrelevant. I've never seen that happen. I've never seen anyone get that kind of lifetime achievement Heisman.
I've never seen it either, but I do believe his body of work this season alone does merit it when you look at the competition that's out there.
I agree.
But if they lose again once or, God forbid, more, then I think it falls into question. And Gordon, although his team already has two losses and might get a third, he's got just unbelievable numbers that are sort of unheard of.
I agree.
So win out, Mariota, and it's yours.
Pretty much.
All right, one more piece of news before we get into the lines. Our least favorite coach, Mr. Will Muschamp, steps down. A genius move. He found a way to last two more games, which was by stepping down and saying, I'll do it at the end of the season. He tried to pull the Joe Paterno move, although for Joe Pa, it didn't really work out. But he's like, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll step down 4 weeks from now.
Well, Muschamp played it out that way, but if you read the interview with the athletic director, he said it was his call. The athletic director let Muschamp go out with some class, but he said that this was not Muschamp's decision to step down. He said this was 100% a firing. He's just letting them play out the last two.
Yeah, of
course,
that's
a recruiting reason. That's just done 100% for retention and recruiting.
Absolutely. And I have to say, actually, we've been no fan of Will Muschamp on this podcast, but I actually gained a little bit of respect for him in the way he did it. They asked him about his stepping down, and he didn't say some bullshit like people say, you know, I want to spend more time with my family. He said, I didn't get the job done. It comes down to wins and losses, and this is what happens. He's like, I tried to do some good work raising, you know, student athletes, but in the end, it comes down to wins, and I didn't get it done. So I thought he was pretty gracious and pretty straightforward with that. And I want to throw out a crazy theory. This will never happen in a million years, but why not? So the possible replacements for him right now that are being tossed around, Mike Gundy, Rich Rod, and then Mike Shanahan, which is kind of not going to happen. So you got a couple offensive guys. Get a really good offensive coach. Hire Will Muschamp as defensive coordinator. It couldn't happen, but he has done a great job with the defense the last few years. It's the offense that's been just abysmal.
I agree. I mean, I think he's going to, if he's smart, he'll go become a D coordinator somewhere. I hope he's not an idiot and goes and like says, oh, I'm going to take the Kansas job because I need to be a head coach, because he's bound to fail. I'd like to see him at least get a chance at a D coordinator job at a you know, higher level program and make him earn his reputation back. But, you know, I would hate to see him go to Kansas and that's it. That'll be the end of his coaching career. You know, he'll have to be a linebackers coach and work his way back up again if he goes there.
Right. My thoughts were actually Big 12 defensive coordinator or possibly coach of Mountain West, MAC, Sun Belt, you know, some smaller conference.
I don't think he's going to go that route.
You don't think so? I mean, being a head coach in the MAC it's pretty respectable. Guys like Frank Solich do it.
Yeah, but I just don't see that happening. I think he's ingrained enough into the old boys club that someone will, Les Miles or somebody will find a spot for him. That's where he'll end up. He'll end up something like that.
You think he'll get Lane Kiffin'd?
Probably. Someone will bring him in and give him a shot.
Any thoughts on a replacement? Any guy you like? I mean, Rich Rod is the hometown coach for you.
Rich Rod's not going anywhere. He's pretty comfortable here in Tucson. You know, I don't think he's going to take that Florida job. He might. I mean, he very well could. I just don't think it's the right fit. I don't think that he brings the personality that they need in the recruiting in the SEC at that level. I think they need to go somewhere else and try to find either a upcoming young guy. But the guy that I would like to see, it's not going to happen because, as you said, they need offense. It should be Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn was the former defensive coordinator of Florida, who's now the Seattle Seahawks D coordinator.
Right.
He's probably going to be the next NFL head coach. But if I'm Florida, I am calling him up and saying, name the price. It starts at six and it goes up until the negotiation is over. That's who I would pick. I know they need offense. I think he's so good that he'll bring like a quarterback's coach from the Seahawks with him. It's all good. They'll make it work. I think he's the best hire they can make.
Any thoughts on Dan Mullen, whether they'll go after him and whether you think he would consider it?
They'll ask him. He'll say no.
Okay. I actually got an exclusive interview with Coach Mike Gundy. I told him it was him and 66-year-old Mike Shanahan were the top two choices. Here's what he told me.
Are you kidding me? Where are we at in society today? Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40! I'm not a kid!
There we go. Exclusive interview, spill it.
Good job. Good job getting that that interview, Tom. That's a hell of a job with pulling your credentials.
It's tough. I don't think that interview and those kind of feelings are anywhere else on the internet.
I agree. That was very, very exclusive. Good work.
Yeah, I don't think Shanahan's a serious consideration, but nah. I mean, the guy's in his 60s. Go after Mike Gundy. He's the best hire you can make unless you get a guy like Quinn or a guy like Mullen who don't seem like reasonable options at this point.
I agree. I think Gundy's the best pick.
Gundy's an awesome coach. All players love playing for him. He's offensive minded. He'll bring a guy, you know, he can hire a staff and get somebody who's a good D coordinator if he chooses. He's the choice.
The only problem is T. Boone Pickens has a way bigger wallet than anybody at Florida.
It's true, but you can always make an offer.
You can, but it's got to be a pretty aggressive offer if you're going to get him away from like the third richest man in the country.
Well, here's the thing. Coaching matters more in college football than probably any other sport. It's important in all sports, and NFL coach is very important. But in college, not only do they manage these players' lives, they do all the recruiting. They have to teach these kids how to be men. They have to teach them techniques that they may never have used before. There's just so many aspects of it that a good coach can have a drastic effect on a team. Look at George O'Leary going to Central Florida, taking them from nothing to a pretty good team. Look at Dan Mullen, what he's done, Hugh Freeze, Art Briles, our man. There are just so many examples of when you had a nothing program and you brought in a coach and he turned things around basically on his own merits. Chris Peterson's another fine example, probably the best example ever. So you can change the whole scope and path of a program by just hiring a good coach. So why not spend a little bit extra?
I agree. Like I said, that number's got to start at 6.
Just do it. Give him whatever he wants.
I like it.
Okay, Spill, let's take a quick break and then we will get back with the lines right after this. We are back, ready to get in the Saturday lines. And we are going to skip the Thursday games and the Friday games because this will probably go live on Thursday, so most people won't listen in time. We're going to start with Oklahoma State at Baylor. Baylor is a giant favorite in this game. You have something to say about the Thursday night game, though, that will affect this game.
Yeah, absolutely. The Thursday game with Kansas State at West Virginia, Kansas State has to win that game because that's the only ranked opponent left on Baylor's schedule. Unfortunately, like you mentioned, this spread with Oklahoma State's huge because they're 4-6 and they're not ranked. And Texas Tech, they've completely dropped off and they're not ranked. So, you know, that's going to be a huge factor when the committee looks. And, you know, I really want Kansas State to keep winning. So, hopefully Baylor beats them and beats them pretty well, and that'll get them into the top four.
Yeah, Baylor needs to make a statement in this game. Now that we're done with the BCS and we are back to more of a human element in the playoff committee, I think they're going to look at some of these November games and see if you blow out your opponent. Now, Oklahoma State is 4-6, as you mentioned, but they are sort of a big name, big-ish name. And if you can blow them out, win by 40 points or so, I think that will register well with the committee. So if you want to jump Ohio State again, eventually try to jump TCU and get into that top four, this is a game where you have to come out strong and dominate. Now, that said, for gambling purposes, way too high of a line.
No, Dax, the quarterback, is probably going to be out with concussion symptoms for Oklahoma State. So lay it.
Right, but Oklahoma State is just a quarterback factory. It never seems to matter who's playing. It makes a slight difference, but I don't know.
40. So beat them by 40+.
What's your prediction?
67-20.
Okay. We'll agree to disagree. I do think Baylor wins it, but I think it's going to be more like 20-21.
All right.
Okay, that's all for the Big 12 this week that we have. Let's go to the SEC. We've got Ole Miss at Arkansas, Missouri at Tennessee, and Vandy at Mississippi State. Big line in the Mississippi State game, a 30-point line. Even though it's Vandy, I think that's too much. The other games are 3.5-point lines. So any thoughts on any of those three?
I think everyone's going to hold pretty true to form. Missouri's probably going to win at Tennessee. They just got a lot of stuff going on right now. There's some allegations with some players at Tennessee, the best player. So I don't think they're going to show up for that game. The Mississippi, Ole Miss at Arkansas is probably going to be the closest of all these games. But that's a weird game. Arkansas looked really good last week, shutting out LSU.
Yeah, congratulations to Brett Bielema picking up his first win in the SEC. Well-deserved. They've been playing teams tough all year. They were close against Alabama. They've played some other good games. Finally get not just a win, but a huge win against LSU.
I agree.
A tough one. If I were a betting man, which of course I am, I think I would take the points in that game.
Honestly, if you're going to put money, bet the under. Bet the under.
What is it at now? Do you know? I don't have over unders for this week. I've not done all my homework.
No, last I saw it was like, I think 44, 45. This game's going to be in the 30s at best. This could easily be a 23-9 game. So if I'm going to put money on this game, I'm putting money on the under.
Agreed. I think you're looking at most a 23-20 game. So what's that, 43 points? So under seems like a safe bet if it's anywhere mid to high 40s or higher.
I agree.
Missouri-Tennessee frightens me. I don't know what is up with Missouri. Remember, this team lost to Indiana somehow, but they're also challenging Georgia for possibly winning the SEC East if things break their way. So I don't know what to think of them. I probably would avoid anything to having to do with them for the rest of the year. Mississippi State minus 30 is just too much to lay, even though it's Vandy. And then we've got a killer slate of games. Auburn hosts Samford. I don't even know what that is. Georgia hosts Charleston Southern. And Alabama is minus infinity against Western Carolina. I don't know how. I want to get your take because Dan and I argue about this every year. I say that it's bullshit that teams are playing this kind of competition in late November. Dan says it's a nice opportunity for these schools to sort of get on the college football map. Maybe it helps them get some better recruits.
It's all about money. The whole, it's all about money. These teams get so much money from these schools to come play these games.
Right, well, but play in September.
No, I think that it's nice to spread it out. It's nice for these SEC teams to beat the daylights out of each other, to get a nice rest at the end near the late part of the season, the home stretch. And again, it helps them because they're playing better games earlier in the year back in the BCS era. As they're beating these good teams, they're jumping up the top 5, top 10. And as we know, once you're in the top 10 in the BCS, it's damn near impossible to fall out of it as long as you keep holding true to form. And I think that had a little bit to do with it as well, is the fact that, you know, they'd rather schedule their better out-of-conference games early, keep the cupcake one or two of those for later in the year because their ranking's not going to be affected. We'll see how this changes over the next few years now that we're not in the BCS anymore.
Do you think we're going to see any implications next week when Alabama puts up 50, 60 points on Western Carolina. If, say, Oregon or Baylor comes out strong against a Power 5 opponent and wins that game by an equal amount?
No. I mean, it's an accepted part of college football tradition at this point. You know, this is just the way it is. They play these teams, and they're going to play one or two or three a year. It is what it is. I still think it's fine because these schools are making a ton of money for their athletic departments for all sports. And, you know, as you joke about some of these schools, you don't know how to pronounce their names. Now imagine the recruiting issues they have trying to get kids to go to Samford. And they're like, Stanford? I'm a C student. You know, they need that. So, like you said, their name is going to be on the ticker, on the sports center, you know, the bottom line, and that helps. You know, every little bit where recruiting helps when it's an uphill battle like Western Carolina and Eastern Kentucky. You know, $300,000, $400,000, $600,000 for one of those games, that can make a huge difference to an athletic department.
Right. The one thing I'll concede is that the SEC schedules are so difficult that I guess it's not that big of a deal. If it were a Big Ten team playing these types of team at this point in the season, then I think it would be a little worse.
Yeah, they play them all in September.
But they play Indiana, so it's the same thing. Okay, speaking of the Big Ten, let's move along to the Big Ten.
Okay.
There's a lot of games in the Big Ten this weekend. We got Rutgers at Michigan State, -22.5. My lines are a day old, so I don't know what they're at by the time you listen to this. Minnesota at Nebraska, -10.5. Penn State is -6.5 at Illinois. Let's pause for that one since we're both lifelong Penn State fans. Any thoughts on the first two, Michigan State or Nebraska?
No, I think those are pretty standard. I think Minnesota is terrible. And their rankings, just the fact that they haven't played anybody good.
Pretty much.
They're going to lose their last three in a row. Nebraska's going to – they'll handle them fine. Wisconsin, Iowa's, again, really bad. They're on a really, really down year. You know, Wisconsin's going to handle them easily.
Wisconsin's a pretty good team now for people who only saw them in the beginning of the year and haven't paid attention. They've improved dramatically since the beginning of the season. And doing it all without a decent quarterback, it's pretty remarkable. If they had Christian Hackenberg, I think they'd be – maybe undefeated.
Probably. If they had Connor Cook, they'd probably be undefeated.
Probably. Okay, so I'm with you. And there's also Maryland at Michigan, which I have zero thoughts on.
Who cares?
Okay, so saving Ohio State for afterwards, let's talk about Penn State at Illinois. Penn State is now bowl eligible. Spill it.
Right.
And they will go to a bowl since they're Penn State and they've got a huge fan base. So the prediction right now is the Pinstripe Bowl against Georgia Tech, which cracks me up because that's going to be an over-under of 6.
Sounds about right.
Georgia Tech has no offense recently. Penn State has zero offense. Both teams have good defenses. I can't wait. If that's the game, I'm betting the under.
I like it.
Penn State at Illinois. I think this is a tricky one. On the road, 6.5-point line. Penn State has no offense. I don't like it at all.
Yeah, I'd say this is probably a stay away. I think the weather this weekend is going to cause a lot of games to be stayaways. You really just don't know how these players react. You know, you see where they're from, but you have to look at the roster and find out where the players are from and if they can handle playing in that kind of weather.
That's a crucial point. Check the weather before betting on any game this weekend. Any game, even if it's in the South, there are some crazy weather patterns, and you could probably get a lot of good under bets if there's some snow.
Agreed.
You want to talk about the Buffalo snowstorm?
Nope, they're screwed.
It's rough, even for two upstaters like ourselves. It's a lot of snow.
Oh, it's a lot of snow. The only plus side is all the people that I work with that are all seeing it on the news and coming up to me and they're like, is this where you live? Is this where you live? And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty close. You know, Buffalo's getting hammered, but that's because it's a major city. As you and I know, the Tug Hill Plateau not too shabby either. And for people that don't know what the Tug Hill Plateau is, just go on to Google, type it in. It's the worst snowfall in the country. It's a bad snow belt.
Yeah, it's the areas actually right now south of Buffalo. The city of Buffalo is sort of divided. South Buffalo's got a lot of snow. North Buffalo, not nearly as much. But it's those towns like Orchard Park, the ones south of Buffalo, that are just getting hammered with like 6 feet and 2.5 more feet expected through this weekend.
Tonight? Now?
Yeah, hope you stocked up, filled the keg.
Get to the duty free and get your Labatt's, eh?
So what you do in this situation is, first off, you fill your gas tank in your car. You put some like old clothes and granola bars and water bottles in your car in case you ever get stranded. More importantly, you just go get a shitload of beer before the storm and you just sit there and watch TV. Hopefully the power doesn't go out and you just drink and have fun.
That's about your only option.
It's actually kind of nice after the snow falls and you're just trapped in the house for a couple days. You realize how busy your normal life is. We had a snowstorm like this about a year or 2 years ago in Connecticut where there was over 4 feet and they just didn't plow the roads for 3 days. You couldn't go anywhere. My parents were actually visiting and they got trapped here for 2 extra days.
Oh no.
Yeah, that was not ideal. But the part about just not being able to go to work, not be able to do errands, you know, you've got basically Netflix and a bunch of beer and some like, I don't know, guitar, board games, things like that. And you realize how hectic you are every day. And it's kind of nice to have a little bit of a break. It's kind of why it's almost like being in prison, you know. At first it sucks, but then you're like, well, at least I'm going to lift weights and get jacked.
Okay, fair enough. I like it.
Not the perfect analogy. There's far fewer skinheads trying to rape you in a snowstorm. Just a few.
Well, it depends on where you are.
Yes, it depends on where the snowstorm is. But
yeah, it sucks for Buffalo. They're in trouble. I feel their pain. I think back in like late September, early October, we had rain and only 30% of the office showed up.
Is that right?
Yeah, it rained.
Does it ever snow in Phoenix?
No. It only rains 12 to 15 times a year.
What is the lowest temperature that it's been since you've been out there?
We've gotten to the upper 30s. It's when I'm leaving for work in the morning, I leave for work at about 6:45 in the morning. It's been like in the mid 40s.
Okay. And what is your general take on growing up in upstate New York and now living in Phoenix?
It's amazing.
Do you feel like you just wasted 30 years or what?
It feels like...
Wasted is not the right word.
No, not wasted, but it feels like winter is so much more than what we remember it as because there's just so little you can do. You know, living in Phoenix, this is the best time of year for things like concerts, where back home... You know, if there's a great band playing at Madison Square Garden in early December, you can't buy a ticket if you live in Syracuse. There's no guarantee that you can make that drive in that time of year with the weather. You know, we're here. If I want to go see a band in L.A. in December, buy it whenever. The roads are going to be fine.
Right. It's funny you say that because I'm trying to plan my Christmas trip up to Syracuse now. And I basically have told my parents and my wife that we'll try to leave the morning of Christmas Eve, and then we'll come back sometime between Thursday and Sunday.
Okay.
Give yourself like a 3-day window, whenever weather permitting.
Exactly. I mean, I know with my flight, it's going to be rough. I fly into Newark and then up to Syracuse, and on the way home, I fly to Chicago, then to Syracuse. So Newark and Chicago, total coin flip. We'll see if I make it back after the holidays. You know, fingers crossed. That's why I book all my flights back on Saturday instead of Sunday to save myself that extra travel day, which happens. I've missed all my flights a month ago when I flew back from my brother's wedding in Syracuse. Every flight got pushed. I ended up getting bumped off an airline completely to a different airline. It's great. They upgraded me. I sat first class for the first time in my life. It was baller.
Oh, good.
It was Peyton Manning breaking the record against the Niners. A touchdown record. I got to watch that in the airplane sitting first class on my DirecTV flat screen.
I am yet to have the first class experience. Just a commoner in coach.
It was great. I gave her the whole sob and song and dance sob story. I was hungover, best man, trying to get back home after, you know, being there for my brother. And it worked. She bumped me over to a new airline and up to first class for free. Great. I don't know how I'm going to fly ever again, any normal flight.
I got to start trying that. I'm just a poor hungover groomsman.
Oh, I just got to get home. I spent so much money on my brother's wedding. Please.
Yeah, that's good.
Plus, Chicago's infested with Ebola. I really don't want to have a 9-hour layover.
All right. We got to keep it moving.
Yes.
I don't even know where we were. Let's skip Ohio State. Who gives a fuck about them? Ohio State needs is for Wisconsin to win. Don't root for your own team against Indiana. I mean, you could do that, but what you really need to root for is a big Wisconsin win, because without a little bit of help, you're in trouble.
Agreed.
You need that win over a highly ranked or more highly ranked Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship. So if you're an Ohio State team, an Ohio State fan, you root for two teams from now on. And that is your team in Wisconsin.
I like it.
ACC, Boston College at Florida State, 20-point line. Way too much. FSU is going to slack off the whole game. They'll turn it on sometime in the third quarter. And they might cover, but it's dangerous. I would stay away.
Normally, yes. I kind of am leaning towards not agreeing, just because BC on the road has always been their trap game. So I feel like when they get a chance to play them at home after, you know, dealing with them kind of yapping at them last year, thinking, you know, they thought they were going to pull the upset. And I just have this weird feeling that Florida State's going to remember all that yapping they did, thinking they were going to upset them last year. And I think this year at home, they're just going to stomp them.
You think it'll be the rare revenge game after a victory?
I do. I do. Florida State's weird. They find their motivation in weird places, so I wouldn't put it past them.
And that is the issue with them, is simply motivation. Motivation and staying out of jail, although the Tallahassee police seems to help a lot with the latter.
They got that on lockdown. Don't worry about that.
It's such a joke. By the way, update on my Fantasy Felon League. So I've mentioned this before. I was in a Fantasy Felon League. Obviously, a lot of Florida State players were taken. The first actual points of the league came with the PJ, what's his name, PJ Williams?
Ah.
So my brother actually drafted him.
They dropped the charges.
Right. Well, this is the controversy in our league, because they say this should have been like a 10-point hit and run, but instead it's only going to be a 2-point score for my brother for traffic tickets. So okay. The Tallahassee PD has cost him a comfortable lead in the Fantasy Felon League.
I think that's fair. I think that's the same as referees costing guys points in fantasy football. It's just part of the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like if you're, you know, when Russell Wilson had that questionable catch in that one game a couple years ago or last year, and that probably affected somebody's fantasy football week outcome.
Oh, yes.
That's what's happened. My brother just lost 8 points because of the Tallahassee PD.
Well, they're on the payroll. They're going to take care of it.
It's one thing to skirt the law and to treat the law like a joke and to give players, football players, preferential treatment over other citizens. But when you mess with my fantasy league, man, you motherfuckers have to pay. All right, Louisville at Notre Dame, Miami at Virginia. Miami at Virginia, who cares? Miami had a nice game against Florida State, but they're a mediocre to halfway decent team.
Total letdown, stay away game. Completely stay away from this game.
Right. I do like Louisville with a 3.5-point spread at Notre Dame. Notre Dame has been not playing very well the last couple weeks. And if you can get over a field goal, I think you've got to take the points. Louisville has a strong defense. This should be a low-scoring game. I think a nice field goal game either way should settle it.
I think that sounds about right. And again, I think the low scoring is the play. If you're going to put money on this game, bet the under.
Under is good. And I think Louisville, if you can get them at more than 3. So when I checked, it was 3.5. So I would jump on that. If it goes down to 3 or even 2.5, then probably not as good of a wager.
Agreed.
All right, Spillett, I'm turning it over to you for our West Coast rundown. We've got Washington State at Arizona State. That's a tough situation I want you to talk about. Arizona State with the killing loss, which I, of course, did not see because it ended at, you know, sometime at noon on Sunday when it actually wrapped up.
Yeah, it was just a total boner of a game. I mean, they really did not play well. They kind of mailed it in. It's weird. I mean, the thing is, you know, I joke about the weather being a little chilly here, but still, you know, 70, 72 is a high every day. And they go up and play in 20-degree Corvallis, and that's hard to do. That's a tough place to play, and that's really their first cold weather game of the year. You know, so I think that was played a little bit into it, but they shot themselves in the foot. They killed themselves, and you know, I don't think they'll have a letdown. I think they're going to cover the spread this week. It's a huge number, but it doesn't matter.
It's unfortunate. It doesn't matter. They could still be playing for a spot possibly in the New Year's Six. The tragic thing is, in order to get in the New Year's Six now, they probably have to upset Oregon in the championship game. And if they do that, they've cost the Pac-12 a spot in the playoffs. So it's sort of a lose-lose for them. Obviously, they want to get in the New Year's Six, but do you want to keep your conference out of the first ever playoff? If you're a fan of, not of Arizona State, but of anyone else, or if you're sort of neutral, I don't think you want to see Arizona State beat Oregon anymore.
No, and honestly, I think that their opportunity in the power third, the New Year's Six is not going to happen, because if they were going to get in, they'd probably get in as the last team, the last bowl preference. And this year, the last bowl preference goes to the Fiesta. And I don't think the Fiesta Bowl will take Arizona State, because they lose so much travel money by not having a whole fan base travel in and get hotels. The same reason that the NFL will not allow the Cardinals to go to the Super Bowl this year. It's just not going to happen. It's going to cost them $120 million in tourism if the Cardinals, and that's what the Super Bowl brings in. So that's, you know, $60 million, $75 million they're going to lose. And this is not going to happen. The money side of things are going to win out always. So I think Arizona State's done.
Are you saying that the CIA secretly injured Carson Palmer?
No, but I'm pretty sure that this is going to be this was a huge sigh of relief from Adolf Goodell and his people.
That's an interesting point I wouldn't have thought of, but you're probably right. I doubt they'll get in the Fiesta Bowl.
It's too much money. If they'll lose so much tourism money, they need 2 separate teams coming in to travel in here.
So I think if you're just a Pac-12 supporter, you're throwing all your weight behind Oregon at this point.
Correct.
Unless you're actually an Arizona State fan. And even at that point, I think you have to be a little ambivalent about wanting to win. Well, we know how fans are. Of course, you're going to want to beat Oregon. But if you're looking at the big picture, you want your team, you want your conference in the playoff.
Right. And then the thing is, Arizona State still got to beat Arizona.
That's true. And I'm not saying that either of those teams are guaranteed to make it there without any more losses. Even Oregon has the Civil War. So,
yeah, I mean, but Arizona State could easily lose to Arizona and end up in the Las Vegas Bowl, which I will gladly drive up for.
Ooh, interesting. Very interesting. I might have to fly out for one of these.
Oh,
I got plenty of vacation days burning a hole in my pocket.
I think you should come out for the Pro Bowl.
That is questionable, but...
The weekend before the Super Bowl, the parties out here are insane during Super Bowl week. The Pro Bowl is going to be so hilariously funny.
The problem with that is I have vacation days to burn before the end of the year, so...
Ah.
That's why I'm eyeing some of these bowl games. The Pinstripe Bowl might be a good one if Penn State's in that, so...
Okay. Well,
we shall see.
Keep an eye on the Cactus Bowl and also the Las Vegas Bowl.
First off, I have to wait till the bowls are announced so I actually know what they are.
The Cactus is used to be the Buffalo Wild Wings, which used to be the Insight, which used to be the Copper.
Is that the Sun Bowl?
No, this is the one here in Tempe.
See, this is the problem with them all being named after corporate sponsors. I have no idea what city they're even in, except for the Ford Motor Bowl, stuff like that.
Well, the Cactus Bowl, you gotta...
Well, I assume it's somewhere out there, but...
Cactus Bowl is now the one that's at Arizona State Stadium, which is 3 miles from my house.
Well, good. Whatever it is, it'll be sponsored by Tostitos.
No, they left. It's Vizio now. The Vizio Fiesta Bowl.
Tostitos is out?
They're out.
Did they finally realize that paying $3 million per bowl game, you'd have to sell the United States weight in chips, basically, to make that up?
I think there was some shadiness going on with the whole bowl committee anyways. There was some money exchanging hands, and I think Tostitos just walked away.
It's very controversial. This is a controversial conspiracy-based podcast. We got Ebola spreading in Chicago, the CIA taking out Carson Palmer. We've got shenanigans at the Fiesta Bowl. You watch out.
There's a lot going on.
All right, what about the other games? Colorado at Oregon, Arizona at Utah.
That's going to be the best game. I mean, USC-UCLA is going to be good. I think the best game is going to be that Utah-Arizona game. I think both teams are fun to watch. I think both teams play really hard and in a really fun style. And, I think Utah, in another couple of years, Utah might be a force to be reckoned with. I think they're going to be really good. I think they keep restocking talent. And the fact that they have these missions, these guys that go off for missions and come back, is, they're a little bit more mature physically because these kids aren't 21-year-old freshmen and not 18-year-old freshmen. They're 23-year-old sophomores and juniors. And that's a huge factor when you're playing against so many young kids, which a lot of these teams out here play a ton of freshmen and sophomores.
Right, and Utah is one of the most well-rounded teams in the Pac-12. They do have injuries hurting them at this point, their quarterback. But just looking, going forward, well-rounded team. They've done some great recruiting. They've gotten a lot out of the talent they have. As you mentioned, they have some older, more mature guys. They also have a great home field advantage. They're kind of in the middle of nowhere.
That was the next point I was going to make. Nobody from Southern California or Arizona wants to go to Utah in November. I think that Utah and I think that Washington are the last two teams I would want to play at this time of year. I think Chris Peterson's been there long enough that I am terrified of him. When you give him that kind of talent, that kind of recruiting budget, I would not want to play him 10 games in the year once he's figured a lot of things out. And I don't want to play Utah even with injuries. It's just not a place you want to travel.
Right. So Utah's actually favored by 4 at last I checked.
That's right.
Would you lay it?
Yep.
I have a thought on USC at UCLA. Last I checked, 3.5-point game. This is one of the biggest rivalries in all of the nation. Take the points.
I agree. I think you should take the points. It's a weird game. I know that things are a little bit different now with Carroll and Kiffin. All those guys are gone, and there's not as much of the animosity, but I think this is the start of it.
But there is animosity between the players. It doesn't matter who the coaches are. They have 100 years of tradition dividing them apart.
it's very much like we've talked about before when you know, Louisiana Monroe plays Louisiana Lafayette, the same thing. These guys are all know each other. They're all from Southern California for the most part. You know, I think that this is definitely a rivalry that's fun to watch. I wish both teams were doing a little bit better this year. I thought USC was a little undervalued early in the year and UCLA was overvalued, and I think it's a little bit flip-flop now. But yeah, I would take the points.
Right. I mean, this is big. I mean, you can tell people who live on the East Coast, this is essentially Michigan, Ohio State for the West Coast.
Definitely.
It's a huge, huge rivalry. And therefore, when both teams are semi-even in talent, take the points.
And especially this next two years, because once LA has an NFL team, who knows? This rivalry might die down a little bit because, you know, it's just not going to get as much of the community's attention once there's an NFL team there.
We will see. NFL did fail in LA before, so I'm not convinced it will be a big hit. But we'll see how it goes. You are the West Coast guru.
I try.
Okay, what we're going to do now, that's all the games, the big games. But I've prepared a little roundup of the non-Power 5 conferences since we largely ignore those. I'll just go through what I have on each conference and then give you a chance to respond if and when you have anything to add. You might have nothing, you might have a lot. I have no idea what your level of interest is in the non-Power 5. Probably little, shaking your head.
Very little this year.
All right, we'll start with Conference USA. We've got Marshall at UAB this week. That's a 20-point spread. I cannot lay that quickly enough. Marshall is destroying teams, and their next two games are against chumps, UAB, and then Western Kentucky's all right, but they're going to win that one as well. Then where it gets tricky is the Conference USA championship game, the Tuesday night lights of Jones C. Edwards Stadium. Marshall will probably host this one. They'll probably play La Tech. Louisiana Tech's three losses are to Oklahoma, Auburn, and then a three-point loss to Northwestern State, which Northwestern State sounds like one of those schools that you would have in like the program or Varsity Blues when you can't get the rights to an actual school name.
Big State University.
Yes, absolutely. So there's that loss, which probably isn't great. They don't play Marshall. They don't have many common opponents. Their only one really is Southern Miss. Marshall beat them by 46. Louisiana Tech beat them by 11. Marshall's next two games are against, let's see, what did I say? Oh, yeah, UAB and Western Kentucky, who Louisiana Tech plays both of them as well. So that will give us some basis of comparison going into that championship game. I do think Louisiana Tech will be the best chance for Marshall to lose this season. They're still going to be the favorite, but I think there is a chance they could drop that conference championship game. So I think don't watch this conference because nobody cares, but if you're going to bet on the Conference USA championship game, then keep an eye on the next couple weeks and what each of these teams do. But I think we're looking at one of those teams to win it. And my money's on Marshall. What I really want to see is Marshall make the New Year's Six against like Auburn, and Auburn just beat them by 70. It's going to be great.
It's Rakeem Cato's championship to lose. Move on.
Do you think Marshall stands any chance of competing in a New Year's Six game?
No. I've watched them probably three full games. No.
Okay. Mountain West. Colorado State is in a similar position to Marshall. They host the great New Mexico this week. It's a 22-point line. Lay it.
Yeah.
This is an interesting one because if Marshall falters, Colorado State could sneak into the New Year's Six, and Jim McElwain, their coach, could also be up for a bunch of jobs this offseason. So there's a chance they could be in a New Year's Six game playing like Mississippi State or some team with much more talent and having an interim head coach. So this could be an excellent, excellent gambling opportunity.
I believe I was the one that came on this podcast and said Colorado State was my sleeper team, and Garrett Grayson, the quarterback, was my sleeper.
Your sleeper future Buffalo Bills quarterback?
Future NFL starter. Looks like he's doing pretty well, 9-1.
Yeah, so this is a good team, and if you're a place like Michigan or Florida, you might want to give McElwain a look. He's a good coach, really good coach. Came from Alabama, of course. Has done a really nice job at Colorado State. They're 9-1. There's a good chance they're going to win out. They have New Mexico, who we always joke about New Mexico teams being the worst in college football.
Right.
And then they're at Air Force, which they should win.
Of course, very good.
The West Division of the Mountain West. By the way, the Mountain West naming their divisions the Mountain Division and the West Division. I can't tell if that's genius in its simplicity or super fucking lazy.
Bull.
Okay. Anyway, the West Division is a toss-up. Nevada, San Diego State, Fresno, all vying for it. Colorado State beat Nevada already. I believe Nevada's the best of those three teams, so I think that means Colorado State is your favorite to win.
Correct.
And that game is Saturday, December 6th at 8 p.m. Mountain Time. For those of you interested, it's hosted by whichever team is better. These conference championship games aren't as big a deal as some of the bigger ones, so Marshall hosts theirs. Colorado State will host theirs, most likely.
Yep.
It's just like an extra home game for the better team.
It's an advantage, especially when Marshall plays in a dome and Colorado State plays in the weather and the elevation. That's a big factor.
It actually makes sense that you reward the team that played better throughout the regular season.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, 2 months ago, I did come on this podcast and tell you Colorado State was going to be that team.
Well, you're right. And you can come back and brag if and when they do make the New Year's Six.
We'll see.
And then I will tell you how much money I'm betting against them.
Oh, of course. Well, it depends. Depends on who they play.
It does depend. But always, when we compliment a non-Power 5 team, always remember that I will bet against them as quickly as I can move as soon as they play an SEC team.
Okay.
Or if they play Baylor-Marshall, over-under 180, spread 45.
Yeah, that's about right.
The awful athletic conference, the AAC, big game, Cincy coming to town at UConn. It's a 10-point spread, which is respectable for UConn. That's about as good as you're going to do against Cincy. So first I'll do the roundup and then we can talk about UConn football. Memphis, Cincy, UCF all tied for first. UCF lost to UConn, so I can't take them seriously. And Memphis beat Cincy head-to-head, so begrudgingly, I think Memphis has to be your favorite.
Okay.
I don't like the idea of Memphis winning a conference, any conference.
Well, the only thing I have to say about this entire deal is there's only one coach of all the, what do they call them, non-Power 5 or whatever you call them?
Non-Power 5.
Non-Power 5. They, of all the coaches, there's only one coach of a non-Power 5 that makes over $2 million salary annually. And it's Tommy Tuberville at Cincinnati, so that's who I pick. He makes the most money. They probably are the best team.
Fair enough. They are, in my opinion, probably the best team. But with Memphis having the tiebreaker, that's going to be tough. And who knows? I think UConn maybe will pull the upset this week. No, I'm joking, of course. So UConn's going to lose. You can never bet on UConn. Bob Diaco said this week that UConn this season, trying to make UConn win games was like a baby trying to lift a coffee table.
Okay.
Weird analogy, but sort of correct.
Looks good.
He also said that he compared it to a dump taken by a husky. I don't have the actual quote, but he said he called them a steamer, quote unquote, referring to, this was a few weeks ago, but
that's that whole conference.
Yeah, basically he said you don't win the Iditarod without leaving a few shits here and there.
Okay.
Sort of makes sense again. I think he used it just because it was a husky, So it relates to UConn, even though it doesn't really make that much sense.
Exactly.
I would say UConn is more like a child who you have told, who has the capability to walk, but you've told him he's only allowed to crawl. And therefore he's trying to get across the yard, but you won't let him walk. You've only made him crawl, i.e. not throw the ball and only run.
Okay.
Diaco has made some questionable decisions, I think. He blames it on the lack of talent, but my thought is, like, what the hell do you have to lose? You're UConn, you're a basketball school, nobody cares about football, they only go in the third quarter after they've run out of beer. Why not just throw the ball around the field and make it exciting? If you're going to lose, lose in an exciting way, not 10-3.
Okay, I agree.
Those are my thoughts on UConn. Hire a better offensive coordinator. Let him take control. Diaco, you can still be the head coach and you can focus on defense. But find the next, you know, a young Urban Meyer and just let him go nuts with the offense.
All right.
And maybe he'll be there for a couple years, but that should be enough where you see the beauty of passing the ball and the spread offense that has taken over college football. Time to adapt to the times.
Agreed.
Okay, the Sun Belt. This one is going to come down to Georgia Southern or ULL. Georgia Southern has the lead, but we all know who I'm going with. ULL.
All right.
I can't even figure out if they have a championship game or not. The Sun Belt is like not even on Google. You try to Google their name.
I thought Georgia Southern was not eligible because they're like a first-year program.
Is that right? I don't know because you Google the Sun Belt Conference and you can't find anything online.
I thought I read something that they can't be eligible to win the conference in the first like 2 years they're in it or something like that. So I don't know. Stay away until you know. I'll do some research, but I don't know about that yet.
Well, it's not like you can really bet on this anyway, but Georgia Southern is undefeated in conference. ULL has one loss. I don't know how it works. Like I said, I Googled them. They have a website, but there's no information on it. There's no like Wikipedia page or anything for the Sun Belt Championship game. I'm guessing they don't have one. I have no idea. They're like a guy without a Facebook page. You just don't know what's going on with them.
Fair enough.
So ULL takes it in my mind.
I like it.
And then the MAC. The MAC is a huge clusterfuck. Bowling Green probably has the East wrapped up. The West, however, is a huge toss-up. You've got Northern Illinois, Toledo, and Western Michigan all with one loss, and then I believe Central Michigan has two losses but is still in it. So this is a real tough one. It could go a number of ways. I'm going to say a rematch of 2013. Bowling Green winning once again against Northern Illinois.
I like Bowling Green. I think they're the best team in that conference.
Yeah, and I want to hand it to Bowling Green because they lost their quarterback earlier this season for the year, and they've really responded. And they should have. A lot of people thought this is going to be really bad. It's going to really destroy their season, and they've come back probably the best team in the conference. So kudos. Not a lot of teams could do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Bowling Green, good season so far.
Yeah, these MAC teams are going to surprise some teams in the bowl games. They're going to get matched up against a Penn State or a Miami or mid-level big conference teams like that. And I think we're going to see the MAC have a winning record in bowl games this year.
I think so, too.
I'm calling it 3-2 in bowl games for the MAC.
I like it.
Okay. Anything else you want to add? That's the end of my non-Power 5 wrap-up.
No, that's it. Only thing I'll add is that I can officially say I won my Syracuse bet under 5.5 wins on the season. They're at 3 with 2 games left, so I put my money where my mouth is, and I win that bet. I just have to wait till the end of the season to collect.
Yeah, we skipped Syracuse this week. What do they have left on the schedule?
At Pitt, at BC.
Okay, so that's 2 more losses.
Yeah, most likely. Even if they win them both, it doesn't matter. I bet under 5.5. I cash it in. Now I just need Mike Evans to lay off a little bit so Sammy can win Rookie of the Year, and I'll collect another check.
So me and Partridge had a bet. who would win more games, Syracuse or UConn? UConn's got 2 wins. Syracuse has 3. Cuse not looking good to win anymore. UConn's got SMU left on the schedule, so they probably will win another game. So it looks like it's going to be a 3-all tie.
The old push. The old
right.
push.
In my mind, we both lose.
I mean, both teams lost their quarterbacks throughout the year, and it is what it is. They both stink regardless, but no one really wins that bet. They're all losers.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, but if you can make money off it, then make money off it.
Then that's why we exist. Take the points.
Right, that's right.
I want to reiterate to people, even a $5 bet can turn a Tuesday night MAC game into the Super Bowl. It's unbelievable. Gambling is the best. And by the way, Adam Silver, commissioner of the NBA, comes out in favor of gambling. He's the greatest.
Yes. My boy. That's my boy.
Oh, I love that guy. He's instantly the greatest commissioner of all time.
It's my favorite sport. It's so good. NBA is by far is past every other sport in my eyes. I love the NBA.
Right. So if you're one of the people who listens to this podcast more for the gambling stuff than the college football stuff, make sure you've read that New York Times column by Adam Silver. Watch the John Oliver segment from a couple weeks ago where he talked about the lottery and how it's just legalized state gambling. And you'll have plenty of firepower for your arguments and why sports gambling should be legal.
I agree. And feel free to follow me on Twitter. I'm probably going to be posting some NBA bets here and there throughout the season, some games I like and stuff. So feel free to follow me on Twitter at HarryHood11.
Okay. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. You can find Take the Points on Twitter. I say this every week and nobody ever does. So takethepoints.net is the website. But I don't care. Just listen to the podcast and we're cool.
And all right.
Next week we'll be back. I think Dan will be back. I don't know what's going on next week since it's Thanksgiving, but we will be back in one form or another. And then we'll really get into the bulk of the conference championship games and then our bowl game extravaganza 8-hour podcast. Good stuff coming up.
I like it.
Spillett, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Everyone else, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See you later.
Take the point.